भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवान् तुषेद् धर्मयोनि जनार्दन सम्प्रसीदति वा येषाम् एतद् अत्याहि मेनगा येन वा भगवान् तुषेद् धर्मयोनिर्जनार्दन. Sampraseedati vayesham etad akhyahi menaga. Yena va bhagavam stusyed dharma yonir janardana. Sampraseedati vayesham etat akhyahi menaga. Sampraseedati vayesham etat akhyati menaga. Yena va bhagavam stushin dharma yonir janardana. Sampraseedati vayesham etat akhyati menaga. Yena va bhagavam stuchet dharma yonir janardana. Sampraseedati vayesham tad akhyahi menagam. Yena va bhagavam stuchet dharma yonir janardana. Sampraseedati vayesham etadyakhyati menaga. Yena, by which, va, either, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, tushyet, is satisfied. Dharma Yoni, the father of all religion. Janardana, the controller of the living entities. Sampraseedati, completely satisfied. Va, either. Or. Yesham, of those. Etat, all these. Akhyahi, kindly describe. Me, unto me. Anaga, O sinless one. Translation. O sinless one, because the personality of Godhead, the controller of all living entities, is the father of all religion, and all those who are candidates for religious activities kindly describe how he can be completely satisfied. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. All religious activities are meant ultimately to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is the Father of all religious principles, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16. Four kinds of pious men, the needy, the distressed, enlightened, and inquisitive, approach the Lord in devotional service, and their devotion is mixed with material affection. But above them are the pure devotees, whose devotion is not tainted by any material tinges of fruitive work or speculative knowledge. Those who are only miscreants throughout their lives are compared to demons, Bhagavad Gita 7.15. They are bereft of all knowledge, in spite of any academic, educational career they may pursue. Such miscreants are never candidates for satisfying the Lord. Om Gana Timirandasya Ganangana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamaya Tadatisa Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Shri Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sabadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakadvitam Cha Mancha Kalpa Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyedacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo. Monday morning. Everywhere I go, usually people ask, you know, what about experience of Prabhupada. I didn't have like personal service or anything, but one thing was Prabhupada's death song was always like this, and nobody ever went in this. I don't know how the rule got established, but it was very strict. Nobody except in the wild kirtan would. And nobody ever turned their back to the deity or to Prabhupada. Everybody sat this way and just turned their head back and forth. One time in the Bhagavatam class, it was very, very crowded in the old Los Angeles temple room. It wasn't a very big room, and when Prabhupada came, you know, so many devotees came that weren't normally there. So there was one very small baby, could hardly sit up, and that he was sitting and looking at Prabhupada with his back to the deity. And Prabhupada stopped. Why has his back to the deity? Why don't you train him? So the mother trained him. But now it's a very common thing to see everybody stand right in front of Prabhupada with their back to him in the kirtan, and then in the Guru Puja turn and everybody with their back, or sit down if the speaker's here. Somehow or other that got lost. Wouldn't hurt to revive it. Actually, in Los Angeles, the Vyasasana is up there, like Vrindavan. And so I was thinking about this, and, you know, because it's very hard to train everybody when their habit is so much. But actually, the original Vyasasanas were just placed, and Prabhupada never said anything. He just took whatever devotees gave him. But that particular temple room was built, you know, from the ground up, and they actually asked Srila Prabhupada where to put the Vyasasana. So he said, up here. That way, nobody ever turns their back to either, except when they walk out the door. And we used to back out the door. And everybody at the temple room, nobody just turned their back. Everybody was like trying to be super conscientious. But that's where he put it. So this is a very nice series of questions by Vidura, who is a great devotee already, so he's capable of asking so many questions because he knows about so many things. An ignorant person who doesn't know anything can't ask very many questions that are relevant to the vast amount of knowledge. But these things, in these Bhagavatam meetings between great sages, are lila, arranged by Krishna, so that the proper questions will be asked and the proper answers can be given and they'll be preserved. So they're asking on behalf of us that are ignorant and couldn't, if we did have the chance, we couldn't ask, you know, very many questions. Mostly the questions we get is, how can I do this? How can I, you know, we don't know so much to ask all these kinds of questions about the universe and the, you know, and then get into more and more. So, Vidura is actually Yamaraj. And another Leela was there that he was cursed by one sage that thought he was unjustly punished for something he did as a small child. As a small child, he'd taken some insect or something and stuck a stick through it. So later he was killed by a spear like that. He was innocent of the crime he was being accused of. Some dacoits had run into his ashram or something, and when the police or whoever was chasing, they just assumed that he was one of them. So he complained to Yamaraj and said, this is not fair that someone should suffer for what they did as a small child. So he cursed Yamaraj to become a Sudra, take birth as a Shudra. So Yamaraj took birth as Vidura. He's technically a Sudra, but he was actually the son of the king, but he was begotten not the son of the king, but they were the sisters, and there was no husband, and so Satyavati called Vyasadeva to impregnate the princess, the queens, so that there could be a successor to the throne, because there was no sons of Pichitavirya. So the two princes, they were not very happy. Vyasadeva was not a very attractive man for a young princess. He was a sage and very rough looking, and they were afraid. So the one turned white, and so Pandu was born, who had all good qualities, but he's completely white. The next one was closed her eyes, so she wouldn't have to see Vyasadeva. So Dhritarashtra was born blind. So then they tried again, and the one switched and put the maidservant girl. So Vidura was born of the maidservant. So he was a member of the royal house. He lived, you know, in the quarters and was maintained nicely, but he was technically a Shudra because he was the son of the maidservant, and he couldn't become the king, and he couldn't inherit the property or anything, but he was actually he was a brilliant sadhu. He was respected by everyone, and he was an advisor to Dhritarashtra when Dhritarashtra became the king. But Dhritarashtra didn't always take his good advice, unfortunately. So, and Duryodhan, the son of Dhritarashtra, who hated the Pandavas, he also hated Vidura because Vidura favored the Pandavas. So one day he just chastised Dhritarashtra. He said, why are you keeping this, you know, this offense personified, he referred to Vidura. Because Vidura criticized Duryodhan and criticized Dhritarashtra for being
you know, controlled by his son, and sometimes acting in ways that were not favorable for the kingdom, just for the whims of his lusty, crazy son. So he insulted Vidura so heavily that Vidura just left. He just left home, left everything behind, and became a sannyasi. He just wandered around the world and meeting various sages. So he met Uddhava in the beginning here, right? And heard, you know, different things, and they discussed very intimately about Krishna and remembering Krishna and Vrindavan and all those things. But then Uddhava told him he should, because Vidura was older, that he should go and seek out this, Maitreya Rishi. Because Maitreya Rishi had also happened to have somehow been present when Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, the last instructions. So it was a proper etiquette for Vidura to inquire from him rather than for Uddhava to act like a guru because he was younger when this other sage was available. So Vidura happily made all these inquiries. This one he's saying, describe how you can completely satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's a very important question, because that's what bhakti is all about, is satisfying Krishna, doing things for the pleasure of Krishna. So that's why we need a guru, we need scripture, we need sadhus, we need to learn what pleases Krishna. How else, you know, like Prabhupada gives the example that the new wife, you know, she wants to please her husband, so she'll ask the husband's mother what food he likes and what kind of things he likes, because the mother should know. Nowadays, I don't know if they do that anymore. But it used to be that the wife's main, you know, thing was cooking for the husband and taking care of the children, keeping the house very nice, doing the puja. And I don't know now if it's always like that, modern marriages, because they usually both work and so many things. But anyway, we ask the guru, we read the shastra, we see how other people that have, you know, are great devotees, and we try to learn from them how we can please Krishna. What does Krishna like? Like eating, you know, in the 10th canto, when Krishna was saying how to make the feast for Govardhan, you know, he gave a whole menu of so many things he said to make. And we have Chaitanya Charitamrita, where like Raghava Pandit and his sister Damayanti, they're cooking for Lord Chaitanya. And so many like recipes practically are there. And Prabhupada said that the Krishnadas Kaviraj Agarwal was an expert cook, so we should learn from him, you know, what kind of things they're making. We went in Bengal, Panihati, that's where this Raghava Pandit lived. Panihati is where Lord Nityananda and Raghunath had the chipped rice festival. And nearby there's a house of Raghava Pandit. So if you've read Chaitanya Charitamrita, this Damayanti, his sister, and him also, they would prepare so many sweets, and the kind of sweets that keep, you know, as many some sweets you can keep for years, they won't go bad. So they actually have a big display case there with samples of all these sweets that, you know, that are described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know what they're made of. They look exactly real, but there's like 30, 40 different preparations. So it's described how she makes camphor and even Ganga mud and ginger and this and that and so many different, because she's so personal, she was thinking that, you know, the Lord's eating a lot, so he might get indigestion, so she made the ginger candies also to help Lord Chaitanya's digestion. Personal. And there's many other, you know, incidences like that where they're cooking. We can learn from, you know, how to please the Lord in that way anyway. And we learn from the spiritual master, you know, what Krishna likes. Service. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta. The main thing he wants is the bhakti. Sometimes the ingredients are not, and especially now in Kali Yuga, we can't get very good ingredients. But the bhakti is what he really likes. Vidura, later on actually he ended up back in Hastinapur to enlighten Dhritarashtra and convinced him that he's old and he should quit living like a dog in the house of his, you know, former enemies, and he should leave home and pursue spiritual life. So later when Krishna came to Hastinapur to make one last bid, you know, that they should give the Pandavas some part of the kingdom. Of course, Duryodhana wouldn't do that. So Duryodhana knew when Krishna came, here's a great personality, the king from Dwarka, and I don't know how much he knew that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But so he wanted, just like, you know, any great person comes in culture, even a not very great person comes, people want to invite them to their house and feed them very nicely. So he asked Krishna to come for lunch. And so the king, of course, could offer unlimited varieties of all the best cooks and the best preparations, the best ingredients. Krishna said, no, I will not eat at your house, he said, because you don't like Arjuna. And Arjuna is my friend. He actually said, my body and Arjuna is the same. However you treat Arjuna, that's how you treat Krishna. So Duryodhana was not very happy with that. He was just one thing after another to make Duryodhana more angry and more envious. So Krishna stopped at Vidura's house unexpectedly. And Vidura was so excited to see Krishna and so much overwhelmed with ecstasy that he was crying, so much tears he could hardly see. And he wanted to offer something to Krishna, and all he had was bananas. So he was peeling the bananas, but in his ecstasy and bewilderment, he was giving the peelings to Krishna and not the bananas. So Krishna just ate the banana peels because it was offered with love. That's the most important thing. It was genuine love. It wasn't, you know, a joke or something. He was actually bewildered by the ecstatic love. So he's a great devotee, and he's able to ask him, this is a concern, how to please the Lord, how to make him satisfied. Then, of course, if one pleases Krishna, then that person will be Krishna. Everyone will be pleased. And Krishna said, if you just give him one little bite, like when he was in the forest, or the Pandavas were in the forest, and Duryodhana sent that Durvasa Muni to make trouble for the Pandavas. He sent them late in the afternoon when they wouldn't be able to cook anything or prepare anything because cooking was finished and everything was put away. And he had 60,000 disciples and they were all supposed to be hungry, and then the Pandavas would get in trouble for not taking care of the guests nightly. And Draupadi had a special cooking pot that until she ate, it could feed, you know, unlimited, just, you know, would never run out. Arjuna's quiver was like that. The arrow's just always there, they never run out. Some of the other Kshatriyas, it's described, they had many bullocks carts following them on the battlefield full of arrows and weapons. Arjuna didn't need that. He had the magic quiver that just kept supplying. So she had the magic pot, but as soon as she ate, it was finished for the day. So she had eaten, everything was cleaned up. So they, Bhima just told the sages, okay, you go for the bath and, you know, we'll get everything ready. They had no idea what they were going to do. So Draupadi called for Krishna. Krishna came immediately and he said, well, there, you know, there must be something left from the, you know, the cooking. And she said, no, 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 everything's finished. But somehow Krishna found on the edge of the pot somewhere a little piece of something that was, that didn't get in the washing, was overlooked. You know, sometimes we wash the pots but we leave something under the handles. Right? You ever done that? You know, you find some doll or something. So Krishna took that and he ate that little tiny piece. And just by Krishna being satisfied, all those Durvasa Muni and all his followers, suddenly they felt so full that they couldn't imagine eating anything. And they didn't want to go back because then they'd have to they thought that Pandavas had prepared a big feast for them and they'd have to refuse, you know, right? They'd have to sit there and they wouldn't be able to eat. So they just left. So because Krishna was satisfied. When Sudama, it said when Krishna ate that little bit of dried up rice, the whole universe was satisfied. How to satisfy Krishna is by pleasing the spiritual master, actually. That's described. That's the process. We can approach Krishna and serve Krishna, serve the deity, but by the mercy of the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is satisfied with someone's service, then that fully satisfies Krishna. If someone tries to jump over and just directly go to Krishna without spiritual master, without taking instruction, then Krishna is not satisfied. And Krishna is not satisfied by any amount of wealth that some rich person might offer him. If they're just offering, the motive Krishna is concerned with, that someone's trying to please him, that they're giving up the false ego, they don't care for, like the gopis, they don't care for anything in return. They don't want even Krishna to reciprocate. They only want to give to Krishna. Of course, he does reciprocate and says that they get whatever they pleasure they give to Krishna, they get millions, 10 million times more pleasure. Krishna reciprocates and he's unlimited. But it's not that he's concerned with the amount of the, you know, the, like I, when I, April, I went to see Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. So at that time he was still talking like old friends, you know, about various things. So many of the godbrothers had been coming to visit him, and some of them had left Krishna consciousness in very, you know, not very exciting ways. But previously they had been done huge projects and done so much. So he was saying how it's not these big projects that please Krishna. Although we shouldn't think, well, we won't do anything big. I know one of my godbrothers once, after the thing started, the, you know, the chaos really hit after Prabhupada's disappearance. He said, it's better just to not do anything, right? Just keep your own, you know. And he's done that very nicely. Japa, study, you know, very happy Krishna conscious. But he won't touch the, you know, getting involved with all the other devotees. You know, he used to tell me, oh, I saw the devotees when I was gone there doing this. I said, why didn't you say something? Oh, no, they might not like it, you know. If I point out that they're doing something wrong, they might not like it, which is true, right? But as a preacher and a manager, sometimes we have to do that. So if someone can do a big project and remain humble and understand that it's all by Krishna's grace, good. But the project itself is not the amount of money one collects is not what Krishna wants. he'll take that, but he sees the consciousness, the mood, and he sees what we're not giving. Says that Krishna is more concerned with what, you know, what we don't give him than what we do give him. So if we're keeping dirty things in our heart, or if we're just thinking, I'm a big devotee, look what I'm giving to Krishna, that's not so pleasing to Krishna. But by the grace of the spiritual master, even in the, we can, with such a mentality still, you know, he, like Prabhupada, would beg Krishna in Australia, in, I guess that was Melbourne or Sydney, I don't know which place. There was very few devotees, and Prabhupada brought Radha and Krishna deities, and nobody knew even how to make a chapati, nobody knew anything. They were all new devotees. Australians are not known for finesse, and you know, but they were very sincere, and Prabhupada saw that, and he initiated everybody, you know, people that had just come for a couple days. And when he left, and he installed Radha and Krishna, and when he left, he prayed to the deities. He said, I'm leaving you in the hands of the malechas. So don't blame me for any, you know, what they do, but please help them and accept their service. And those devotees were very, very sincere, and, you know, they've done a wonderful, and they, you know, they have super amazing high standards of deity worship and cooking. Because Krishna, Prabhupada asked Krishna to accept their service, even though it wasn't, you know, up to the so-called standards that you know, you would think it's supposed to be. Because then Krishna, more important, accepts a sincere desire. Not that we should offer Krishna banana peels, because Vidura did. You know, that sometimes we think like that. That we should try to do our as best we can. But what Krishna wants is the bhakti. Prabhupada said, what is that bhakti? He said 16 rounds, four regulative principles. He actually said like that. And he was quoting this. Yome bhakta prayachati. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Fruit, water, flower, these things Krishna likes. And then Prabhupada uses that to show that, you know, Krishna doesn't want animal flesh and, you know, things like that. It's all understood from scripture. Should try to offer Krishna the nicest things. But ultimately we want to offer our entire being, mind, body, words, you know, everything fully to become servants of Krishna. So we can learn. Srimad Bhagavatam actually is unlimitedly complete in every way. All the questions that are necessary are there, and all the answers. And beyond, it's Krishna. It's non-different than Krishna. So the more we read Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we'll understand many pastimes of Krishna. Then we can also read Chaitanya Charitamrita, and very much, you know, loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, between Lord Chaitanya. Recipes, and you know how different devotees cooked for Krishna. That's always one way to please Krishna. Mother Sachi, she cooked every day offering. She cooked for the Lord. When Lord Chaitanya returned to Navadvipa after sannyas, they called Mother Sachi and she cooked for all the devotees. Like Advaita made a huge festival. There were unlimitedly thousands of devotees coming. Unlimited houses full of bhoga, one full of rice, you know, more than one, full of rice, full of wheat, full of bananas, full of this, full of that. And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy to see all that. The Prabhupada explained that if you're very rich, Advaitacharya was very rich, then you can have a big festival like that. You know, millions of people come. But if you're not very rich, you can have one person or something. When Krishna had traveled somewhere, he was traveling, and Nikatan was Mathila, and the king there, Bahulashva, invited Krishna to his house. Another very poor Brahmin devotee named Shrutadeva also invited Krishna and all the sages that were with him and all these things. So Krishna and all the sages divided themselves, you know, they became two and they went to both places at the same time. And the king was offering, you know, beautiful silk cushions to sit on and, you know, marble and everything, first class tables and so many different preparations, everything first class, so many servants taking care of everything. And Krishna was very pleased because he was doing it out of love. And the Shrutadeva Brahman, he had nothing to offer, just some wooden board to sit on, and I think he just gave a glass of water or something. And Krishna was the same, satisfied there also. Of course, the Shrutadeva offered many, many prayers to Krishna, glorifying Krishna. But Krishna didn't think, well, I have to go somewhere where I can eat more opulently. What he wants is that devotion, that surrender. That's what he's looking for. So I suppose if we carried on, but I just looked ahead here, there's many, many slokas that are all questions. Some of them are just about the universe and just delusions. What are the living entities? You can. Then he says, I have put all these questions before you with a view to knowing the pastimes of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the friend of all, so kindly describe them for all those who have lost their vision. Your answers will grant immunity from all material miseries. Such charity is greater than all Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, etc. So that he's describing them, that this is the greatest charity, is to describe Krishna's pastimes. Tavakatamrita tapta jivanam. The gopis made that prayer that this katha amrita, this nectarine pastimes of Krishna, is the best thing for the souls, the jivas who are burning up, tapta jivanam, burning up in the material world, suffering. Srimadatatam, shavana mangalam, it's very auspicious to hear. And it's spoken by great personalities. And bhuvi grinanti e bhurida janaha, that those who spread, who distribute this Krishna katha, they are the most magnanimous, the most munificent living entities. That verse is in the Gopi Gita. That's the one that when Maharaj Pratapa Rudra, during the Rath Yatra, he disguised himself, took off all his kingly dress and dressed in as like an ordinary Vaishnava, poor man, and Lord Chaitanya was apparently sleeping and he was massaging his legs and reciting his verses. And when he recited that one, Lord Chaitanya jumped up and he pulled the king up and embraced him, and he was saying, "You are Buddha, you are the most magnanimous, you are the most munificent. Go on chanting, go on chanting." So we used to have a motto that was, I guess Prabhupada gave it, was used to be on the cards, and the greatest welfare activity is, the Sankirtan movement, distributing books, because that's Krishna Katha. But any kind of Krishna Katha, if we speak it, but if we speak it, not very many people will hear, and they might not remember very much. But the books are distributed, and then people have it with them. They can access it again and again and again. And so Prabhupada put a lot of stress on that. But all the activities that we do to give Krishna consciousness to the conditioned souls, that's the greatest welfare. Bhuvi grinantiye buddhida jana. The most magnanimous personalities, that's what they do. They want to hear about Krishna, inquire about Krishna. Throughout the Bhagavatam, it's like that. These questions are perfect because only questions about Krishna can completely satisfy the self. And if we satisfy Krishna, of course we'll be satisfied because we're part and parcel of Krishna. And that's the only way actually to be satisfied. Those people who are madly trying to satisfy their own senses, they just get more and more agitated. They want more and more. They can never be satisfied. It burns them up like fire. They put the fuel in the fire just once more. Burns it up. And they keep putting it in. Otherwise it'll be finished. So the sense gratifiers just trying to gratify themselves. They just go wild. They go crazy. And some of them manage to keep getting more and more things. Many get very frustrated, become depressed, become, depending on the mentality. Someone may, you know, go out and steal everything and kill people to get what they have. Another weaker person may just become depressed and kill himself because he can't, the desires become too big, they can't satisfy. But when one is trying to satisfy Krishna, we want to satisfy Krishna more and more, but that anxiety makes one more and more blissful. That anxiety to do more and more service for Krishna, that's good anxiety. Spiritual anxiety. Material anxiety is bad, but the material world is, the kunta is full of anxiety. That's the nature. Everyone's in anxiety. Everyone wants more and more. And when they get it, usually they're not satisfied. So they'll blame someone else, you know, why they're not satisfied. But those who try to serve Krishna, they always become fully satisfied. Tushyanti cha, ramanti cha. When we talk about Krishna, chant about Krishna, then one is always satisfied and blissful. That's what everybody wants. Happiness. Anybody, when you go in there, there's so many, what do you say, apotique. So there's so many of them, right? Anywhere I go, that's the main store practically. And, but if we're telling people this mature world is full of misery, they say, why are you so pessimistic? Well, why are there so many doctors that are the richest people? Why are the pharmaceutical companies the richest companies? That they're so rich they can buy all the food companies. That they can make the food bad for you so you need more medicine. Right? They're very clever. Because people are suffering. Why are the, you know, the biggest selling medicine is a painkiller, pain relief, and then now the there's many devotees, especially in London, that work in their pharmacists and they work for these big companies. I always ask them, what's the biggest selling medicine? It's these, the names change, I don't keep up with them, but antidepressants. They always come out with a newer one. Newer and stronger and more devastating. Those are the main sellers. They're very expensive. And then the cheap, ordinary medicine is these headache. I saw one, how many aspirin are eaten every day in America? It's like billions of them, I think. Just, you know, really amazing. So many people that take so many. And that's only, and what to speak of the sleeping pills is another. So many sleeping pills are every day consumed. So people are not happy, they're suffering. But still they're thinking that they have to get more sense gratification. This is Nunam Pramatak Kurute Vikarma Yad Indriya Priteya Aprinoti Asana Bikleshada Asadeya. I left out one line. They're thinking, you know, they're not happy. They're love their senses. that Indriya Priti is supposed to be loving Krishna, but they love their senses. And they're suffering. This material body is suffering. And it's a product of our previous sense gratification that we're suffering. But the thinking, if I get more sense gratification, that will relieve my suffering. But that will just create more suffering. And so it's an endless, you know, madness. Until someone is fortunate, meets the devotees, and gets, you know, the mercy of the devotees. The devotees are feeling compassionate, and they want to go and find people, and give them the holy name, give them the books, give them prasada, or just let them see, you know, the tilak or something, whatever we can do. But somehow or other, you know, let the people hear about Krishna. Alright, any question? Did they use them all up yesterday? That you can't, that when we say that, that kind of sense gratification means just for yourself, that if we, one thinks I'm this body and I have to enjoy this body, the bhakti yoga process, that's the wonderful thing about it, that one can utilize his senses and make them very happy, but in relation to Krishna. So that we want to see beautiful things, so we can see the deity, we can see all these nice pictures. Right? We want to hear nice music, so we can have kirtan. And that's a nice thing. We want to talk, hear about other people, and we can hear about Krishna, much less people. We want to taste nice things. So prasadam is very nice. Right? It looked last night like it must have been people really liked it. Because if we're cooking for Krishna, that will be the best preparation. And even if it's not, if it's offered with devotion. Didn't you read the book, you know, Veda Vyasa's book about the early devotees in Germany? It's a very good book. It's one of the best ones about the, you know, the devotees in Prabhupada. So all those first devotees they were describing, and so many of them, you know, they heard there's a temple and they were trying to find it. That time the temple was in some kind of a warehouse. It was like back behind a bunch of other stuff and up some, you know, broken staircase or something. And so they were quite surprised. They were expecting a temple, you know. And then, you know, the devotees would greet them very nicely and hand them a paper plate with cold potatoes and rice or something. And they would, and they, so many said it was the best thing I ever ate in my life. And they, you know, they would join because they were hippies also, like America. So many in America, they said, I went to the temple and I heard Vishnu John singing and I joined. They moved in, you know, they did. They were hippies and they just, they stayed at the temple. They've been moving around all the time anyway. Those are days where it was like that. But because it was prasadam and because they were sincere and they contacted Krishna, so they didn't think this is cold rice. They were just fascinated. They were tasting Krishna. So we get the best taste, and then what to speak of, you know, when we get the all the nice things. But then a very, very advanced devotee is thinking, you know, like, those things are for Krishna, but I should just have them. Like Lord Chaitanya would always say, I'm a sannyasi and all I want is boiled vegetables. They'll give me something nice. Nityananda, who was an avaduta, at the same meal, you know, where Lord Chaitanya was saying, why are you giving me so many things? I'm a sannyasi, I can't eat so many nice things. Nityananda was saying, you know, why don't you give me some more? I'm hungry and, you know, you just give me a few snacks. Although there were hundreds of preparation. Avaduta. Huh? Yeah, Avaduta is means not at all connected with, you know, any kind of material ashrams or rules and regulations. Nityananda was called, that's when we sing Bande Om Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishitam Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitamtam Sadvaitam Savadutam Advaita and Nityananda Avaduta. The Avaduta, that's how it was called. He was madman. He would sometimes go naked, act like a baby. Sometimes he'd be like a sannyasi. Sometimes he'd be, you know, very opulent. Rishabhdev, when he left home, he just went naked like a madman, never talk. And that's Avaduta. Just nothing to do with the society. We shouldn't imitate. Although, you know, devotees, we don't care that much for what the people think. We go out chanting. But most people like it. They may say, you know, why are you doing this? If Krishna is pleased, then everyone is successful. No matter what someone does, if somebody will like it, somebody won't like it. It's a famous quote from, we learned in America, then things all over the world, from Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was the president in the Civil War time. So he said he was a great speaker and very well known for very short, you know, speeches that said a lot. So one thing he said was, you can fool all the people, or you can please or fool, I can't remember which, some of the people all the time. And you can please all of the people sometimes, but you can't please all the people all the time. Or you can't fool all the people, you know, either one. It's both are true. So devotees, you know, demons don't like when they see devotees. Prabhupada said they, you know, they don't like us because of the regulative principles. I was saying that there's one time in Chicago when we were distributing books. We were distributing many, many books, and at that time we about 20, 25 devotees would go to the airport every day. The two different terminals. And it was just like an ocean, a river of people just coming all day long. And we were in one place about this wide where they'd come through. So everywhere you looked, there was somebody getting a book. I used to say, look, everybody's getting one. There'd always be somebody giving a donation out of all those 10, 12 devotees. So some people didn't like it. You know, they would criticize like anything. But Krishna likes it. So then we, if they, you know, if you're cheating people or making, you know, some kind of disturbance, but if they just don't like the holy name, or they don't like, you know, the fact that you're selling books or something, you know, then we're not concerned. So many people would come and try to. So there was one policeman, undercover policeman, and he used to stand behind us. It's a Hare Krishna, and he's got a wig. Don't take the book, you know, you don't want that. And he would especially harass me. And so I started just joking. I told, that's my brother, he likes to make jokes and stuff like that. And he would get like, because he couldn't be too far out, you know, he was supposed to be the policeman. So one time I went downstairs for I don't know what, and he was sitting in a restaurant with his friend. So I said, hey Joe, how you doing, you know? And his friend just started like, you know, flames coming out of his ears. Get out of here, get out, get out, I don't want to see you. And I said, come on, what's wrong? And he said, you people, you're against whiskey and meat eating, and this is my life, this is my restaurant, and I hate you people. So that's what Prabhupada said, that's why they're against it. They, you know, they don't want this to be promoted, you know, that they think we'll ruin the economy if nobody's eating meat. just talked to someone from Japan, so that the Americans previously had forced the Japanese to buy American beef because they have surplus. More and more people are becoming vegetarian, or at least they don't want to eat beef. They're afraid that they'll get fat or get a heart attack. So the Japanese are afraid of this mad cow, so they decided the American, they don't want it anymore. So the America is putting heavy, heavy pressure by their beef. And that's how the world is running. So they don't want someone promoting. I saw somebody in America, there was a magazine from the Beef Producers Society, and their article was, you know, that the beef sales are going down, and what are they going to do about it? And they said this is due to rampant vegetarianism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to counteract this. You know, so they have to make more propaganda. Vegetarians don't get enough protein, and if you don't get enough protein, you'll have a less of an IQ. And they put those kind of things out, you know, in the school, and the parents are reading, oh, you know, if your child doesn't eat meat, he won't be as smart as he is, right? Better at least give him a lot of soybeans or something. And people believe that. You know, they don't know. But these demons, they're working hard to protect their, you know, they think that what they depend on, what their whole society is built on. Our society is built on mercy and truthfulness and tapasya, you know, those things. And theirs is built on illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and media. And Kali is promoting those things more and more, and everywhere there's an increase in gambling, increase in, especially gambling now, seems like to me, everywhere I go. I haven't seen here so much, but internet gambling and casinos popping up everywhere. So many countries legalizing gambling. The government says it's a voluntary tax. People don't want to pay taxes because they don't trust the government. But the gambling is, a huge percentage of it is tax. But they're very happy to gamble. So the government can reduce other taxes. They just see how we're so nice to you, but actually they've increased. The Bhagavatam says that in Kali Yuga the government will be expert at taxation. That'll be their main expertise. And of course here in Germany we do get returns. You have nice roads and, you know, everything is functioning. In many countries the taxes are huge and there's no they don't get anything back, you know. They don't fix the roads, there's no electricity like in Nigeria. I was there for 3 weeks, and this was in one of the so-called, you know, rich parts of the city. There was no electricity for 3 weeks. Of course, the rich people have generators. And the generator companies pay big taxes. But the other people, they don't have. It's crazy. But then if we get all this sense gratification in return and we just think everything is all right, right? No problem. That's also not very good. It doesn't give impetus. So the devotees have to meet people and show them the ecstasy of, you know, chanting the holy name, and the ecstasy of hearing about Krishna and getting this knowledge. Everybody's experienced, you know. Got the book and it was, you know, like a whole new world. Right? In the beginning the devotees actually met Prabhupada, there weren't any books. And then, you know, by hearing him speak. The first time I read the Bhaktivedanta, I became completely convinced that Prabhupada was the guru. Yeah. You know, I was thinking I have to find spiritual life. I just read that book, the autobiography of a yogi, and I was really frustrated because it didn't tell you what to do. I was thinking, okay, I want to meditate, but what am I supposed to do? You know, And then the devotees somehow, or the next day, I got it back to Godhead. So it was conversation, and somebody said, Prabhupada, what about Jesus? Prabhupada said, you follow Jesus? And the person said, no. He said, then don't ask. And then later on, someone asked, what about Buddha? You follow Buddha? He said, no. Then don't ask about Buddha. Then he said this, you know, that you have here the KFC, right? The chicken KFC. That used to be called Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so the founder of that is the name Colonel Sanders. He used to be all over America, his picture. In Japan they have him out in front of all the, and in the winter they put Santa Claus suit on him. So he had the recipe and he started that business and it became very big. So Prabhupada said, for every chicken that gets cooked by his recipe, he'll have to become a chicken and get cooked. So when I read that, then I thought, like, you know, then I really knew what karma was. You know, you hear about it, but it didn't understand anything, but I thought really far out that somebody would say. Now every time I see those places, I remember probably. And actually I saw a cartoon in some kind of New Age, it was a long time ago, but in some kind of magazine like that. So someone was, you know, he had a certain dress, everybody could recognize him. You know, in a hat, the Colonel's hands. So someone was meeting him and they said, Colonel, you've changed quite a bit. And then he looked closer and his feet were chicken feet and his hand with the feathers coming out. So the karmis even understood, you know, what happens. But he did give some donations and get books, so Krishna was very kind. Because he traveled around and he would be promoting his business, you know, and meet with all kinds of children and entertain them and get everybody wanting to eat at his restaurant. So he was going through airports all the time. So the devotees called him. So that giving a donation, taking a bhagavatam, then he can get relieved of a lot of his karma. But anyway, Prabhupada explained things very nicely. Modern examples that you can relate to. So everybody had that experience. You read Prabhupada's book and then all of a sudden everything is there. And we want to give that to more and more people. Alright? Yeah.
He had the example of the Prabhupada. He got to preach in this day of Black Diamond Liberation.
To become strong.
How to balance what you...
Prabhupada gave us the program. You know, the morning program, 16 rounds, read, you know, every day of your class, and preach. Preaching makes you strong. When we preach the glories of the Holy Name, we develop more faith for the Holy Name. So that's a purifying activity. And that's what Prabhupada gave us, like he sent everybody out immediately preaching. Immediately make back to Godhead, write for it, go out and chant. You know, we left the devotees in New York, you know, after a few months, and they didn't know what they were going to do, but then they found out they could also, you know, whatever they learned, they could give a class. So it's there, the prescription is there. Some people are more inclined to study, they maybe should study more. But if a brahmana does not preach at all, then it'll dry up the bhagavatam speech sometimes. like a small pond, if there's a lot of reeds next to the water, then it's, they suck up all the water. Or these, you know, the clay water pots like in India. Sometimes they leak, but it's a tiny hole, you can't fill it up and everything looks all right. But when you come home, and it's empty, and there's water all over the floor. So like that, that the Brahman doesn't preach that knowledge will drain out. We have to learn something and then try to repeat it. And then we'll become that. But we have to keep strong by the morning program and the japa, especially chanting the holy name. And then we keep a balance. If we try to only preach, for instance, and then you don't know anything, right? Then you'll burn out. You know, some people do that. They go out in the name of preaching. They don't study. They don't chant their rounds. They don't do anything. So they don't last. Some last, depending on how much power they put in the past, you know, they can last for a while. So we take guidance from authorities, from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, and Prabhupada's example. When Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami were discussing glorifying each other, so each one was trying to outdo the other one to say that the other one was the great devotee. And then Sanatana Goswami told Haridas that some devotees are very good preachers, but they don't have, you know, such good behavior. And some have very good behavior and they're very, you know, bhaka brahmins, but they don't preach. But he said, Haridas, you do everything. He does both. Prabhupada did both. He did everything. So we can go out and preach, but distributing the book, that's the most effective preaching. That's one way to balance. Just give people books and that's also humility. Going out to get, you know, try to get donations and everything is a, it's not just to get money, but it's a spiritual process to develop humility. Every religious tradition has it. The monks go out begging, right? Buddhist monks, they do every day. That's what they call it in Japan, takahatsu. But in every Buddhist in Thailand, every day all the monks go begging. And the Christian monks, traditionally, they also begging. The brahmacharis, it's a, for purification, to become humble. Because not everybody will be so happy to see you. And other people will give you very happy to see you. And then if we're properly trained, and then we'll, one has to learn to become equal-minded. You can't become all excited when somebody gives a nice donation and then hate the people who don't. But the idea is to become equal-minded, see Krishna behind everything. That's part of the process of becoming pure anyway, is to go out meet the people and preach and try to, whatever we learn, try to give it to others. If it's prasadam or books or just chanting something. And amongst ourselves we should preach also. Which just means talk about Krishna. Alright?
Yeah. Little more practical.
Huh?
Little more practical. Begging from people, and sometimes they will feel that we should not ask them if people would realize that we are not interested in this book, and we don't further ask, maybe we can give them the donation because it's kind of partial or the opinion that people don't like it. I mean, definitely they don't like it, but should we do it or should we not do it? That's one thing. Or what is the motivation behind it? Another point, when have not given enough money for the book, what should be the criterion, how can you give it? Because it's more sensitive point in this situation. Person, he doesn't have enough money, or he wants to do it, or person is greedy, and he just doesn't give enough money, and still he expects that he will do it. So how we should check the situation?
Well, that's where intelligence comes in, and discrimination, judge of time and place, because there's no hard and fast rule. Everything is, we're personal. So, at least my experience and what I've seen with book distributors, we have to be able to judge. Some people really want the book, and they really don't have money. Or even if they have some money, they need it. They think they need it for something else. So, sometimes it's good to let, okay, well, it's charity, and depend on Krishna. Other people don't want the book, so they give really a little bit. And if you just say, some people in Japan, I say, well, this book is a very religious book, because you haven't said that usually right off. They say, oh, I don't want it, you know, they give it back. or you can say, sorry, but I have to get a certain amount. If you've really made a big point, it's a donation. Sometimes they say you said, then you okay, no problem, thank you very much. And those people might end up reading the book. Occasionally that happens, and sending in a donation. And other times they just leave it somewhere and you find it because they didn't want it anyway. So we have to pray to Krishna and try to be able, you know, that we can make the right decision, and that we can inspire people to, you know, that they're happy, that they want the book, and everyone goes away happy. You don't want to get in a big fight with someone that you said it's a donation, then they give, you know, not enough. And myself, I remember one of the first time I ever went out, I went with one devotee who was back to Godhead, and he was known that he would distribute many back to Godhead. He had a reputation. So we were going door to door, and it was in Texas, so people aren't the nicest, you know. But I didn't know anything, but I was trying to, you know, whatever I knew, I was a new devotee, so I was able to, you know, and I didn't want it, and I said, well, can you give a donation? And the guy said, sure. And then this other devotee said, oh, you've got a really good style. So that stuck with me, and I find many people, they don't want the book for different reasons. Some people just think that it's too expensive, I can't afford it. Even though, you know, because they're thinking like 30, 40 euros, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like if it was in a store. So they think I can't, you know, they can't imagine it's 5 or 10. Other people just plain don't want it. But some people are, and then if you say, well, would you like to give a donation? A lot of people just say, sure. And sometimes they give enough for the book, right? And then you give them the book and they think, wow, I got this book for free. But you can't, like, harass people, you know. You have to ask in a very nice way one time, and if they're still like, say, okay, thank you very much. And, you know, you have to be sensitive. And some people you don't want to say anything. But some people change. And Japan may be different. I've done, you know, the last year is mostly there. Some people, when you say donation, they give donations at the Buddhist temples, and they're very small. You know, small coins. That's donation. And then they just, that automatically they just give them really small. And then many times they say, oh, could you give a little more? And they give it, you know, big. And they're happy, but not everybody. Some people, you know, I gave you a donation, you asked for it. Okay, okay.
And somehow or other it usually works out. In Japan they never had. But yeah. Well, you can tell them a bunch of things. Education, we help. You know, we do this, we do that, we do a lot of things. One devotee that he was a very simple guy, and he was a huge book distributor. And he was a real hippie before. And he lived in the mountain and just went down and got food somehow or other, and never ate sugar or anything for many years. Never read any book in his life. You know, he quit school when he was 13 years old. And then he went to the temple and he ate the whole Sunday feast and got totally enlightened. Read the Bhagavad Gita, came down out of the mountains. And he would tell people, in those days in America, we did a lot of tricks with change. Because to get out of a donation, they always say, well, I don't know, all I got is a $20 bill or something. You know, think. So, but he wouldn't say, I'll give you change. He'd just say, just give it up. He was real tall and like far out, you know. Just give it up. Just paper, man. Just give it up. And they would, many times. They'd just give the whole. And when he gave him the book, he'd just say, this book is really far out. I mean, this is far out. It's really far out, man. It's just far out. And they would, you know, they couldn't argue with that. They just. And then when they, if they said, what is the donation for? He'd say, we're helping everybody. And they couldn't argue with it. He believed that we were helping everybody. He really believed it. You know, he really, not everybody could do the same technique, but it worked pretty good. But book distributors usually come up. You know, you don't want to just say it's for this or that, but you just throw out. I used to, in America, I always just said for printing. You want to print more books? And I was so into it that everybody would think, yeah. If you're really into it, you know, then whatever you say, they're happy. And that's the highest welfare work, is to, you know, we want to distribute more books or give them to everybody. You know? And that's how we keep the price down. I never liked trying to appeal to their mundane piety. You know, overfeeding starving children. Of course we do that, but that's one, you know, small part of it. But the main thing is we're trying to teach people, you know, the highest truth. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.